All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
The struggle is real, kids. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Friday, February 10th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zommers is here as well. Coming up this hour, Joe Zepecki has analysis of President Biden's State of the Union address and the benefits to Wisconsin from his proposals. As the president came here Wednesday to visit a union training center for LIUNA, that's the Laborers International Union of North America Construction Trades. Plus, Dan Schumacher has a weekend sports preview, and the Civic Media Homeroom will tell you about some of this weekend's shows and other news from the radio family. First, we want to let you know that if you have an interest in the state Supreme Court race and have not cast an absentee ballot yet, want to know more about the candidates, we are talking to two of the progressive candidates for court. We get into a bit of the conservative candidates, both of whom received their law schools or law degrees at a school set up by fundamentalist TV preacher Pat Robertson. So we will talk on Monday with Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell at 6:15 and Judge Janet Protasiewicz at 7:15. And again, if you're not up that early at either one or both of them, catch them as a podcast. Every hour of our Civic Media shows across the network, each hour is automatically turned into a podcast episode, and you can find those at the civicmedia.us page, or you can subscribe through Apple, Spotify, all the usual places. Aaron notes, because he writes up all these show descriptions and helps them get posted. It's so easy for you. Not easy for Aaron, but it's easy for all of us to subscribe.
Well, it's easy for me too, actually, or at least the actual podcast editing and posting. Our lovely CEO here, Sage Weil, wrote some code to do most of that for us. So you write the show descriptions for this show.
Yes.
I write them for the Todd Allbaugh show. And aside from that, it's mostly just clicking some buttons, which is nice because then what that really translates to is the fact that 5 minutes ago, the first hour of today's show was already posted.
It's already there. If I screwed up, I can't take it back. I have to do it quickly. Otherwise, it's out there for forever. But I'm pretty sure last hour was perfect, so we should be okay. Also coming up on Monday, it will be Motherhood Monday, something that we do every other weekend with the folks from Motherhood for Good, formerly Moms for Mandela. And that is Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin will join us. And they, too, will talk about the race for state Supreme Court from the perspective of moms and busy parents. And what are the three things that every parent should look at before voting in this state Supreme Court race? So that's Motherhood Mondays, something that we will do every other Monday. And then on the alternating Mondays, we'll have what's called Movement Monday, talking about the movement to clean up politics in this country. How do you get big money out of it? How do you stop corporate personhood? How do you get fairer maps and things like that? So each Monday there's truly, to borrow the industry phrase, news you can use that makes it worth your while to tune in at 7:30 on Mondays. And then at 6:30 on Mondays, as always, Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us to help us talk about current events and, you know, stuff that we did over the weekend. I wanted to call attention to a story, and I'm reading primarily from the CBS 58 website out of Milwaukee, but you could find it pretty much anywhere. A pair of Republican lawmakers has introduced legislation that would require convicted felons to pay not just their fines, but their costs, their fees, restitution, completed court-ordered community service, all of these things before their right to vote is restored. The bill sponsors are Dewey Strobel from Saukville and Shay Sortwell from Two Rivers. Right now, under current state law, felons lose the right to vote after convicted of certain crimes. Voting rights are automatically restored upon completion of a sentence, parole, and probation. In other words, once you've done your time. When you've done your time as an incarcerated individual, when you are no longer behind bars, when you are a free person, your voting rights are restored. Under this bill, if there are court costs and other fees, not just restitution, which obviously does make sense, but all of the administrative costs that can pile up. And by the way, politicians can then keep adding to those, you know, whatever cost or fee, they can make up whatever they want to raise that bar even higher so that people can't vote. And, you know, the ACLU, along with, well, I think most right-thinking Americans would tell you that the right to vote should not be based on wealth. It should not be based on a person's ability to pay. That's a modern-day poll tax, which is specifically designed. This bill is designed to intentionally disenfranchise formerly incarcerated people from taking part in democracy. Again, they did the crime. They did the time. But if there is a dollar of court fees that they haven't ponied up yet, which, again, politicians can raise through the roof if they want to, those people's voting rights would not be restored, even though they have served their time. Sortwell and Strobel have pointed to a bill in Florida that purports to do the same thing, but that bill quickly became an administrative nightmare. It is sometimes very tough to determine how much people owe. It's not like, you know, you've been to government offices where there's backlogs or old software or what have you, and then folks come down on the side of, well, you're still guilty till proven that you haven't paid every dollar of your fines. This would disproportionately target, you know, people of color, people of low income with incarceration rates that are higher. You know, nobody, frankly, should be prevented from voting based on an ability to pay money. Sortwell and Strobel know this. They know Governor Tony Evers will veto it, but introducing it sends a signal. The signal is actually a dog whistle, as once again, Republicans put up something designed to suppress voting. More after this. You're up north. Joe Zepecki, as always, good to talk to you. How have you been this week?
Good. Busy week. Exciting week. Lots happening.
Yeah. You know how they talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. They always refer to it as Nerd Prom. You know, we get our own versions of it here. We had the governor's inaugural, and then we had the State of the State. Next week, we have the budget address. We have the State of the Union this week to go through. So, you know, there's something for every nerd.
That's right. It's maybe it's nerd homecoming if the Correspondents' Dinner is prom. A little less fancy.
There you go. I will say that I said a couple of times that I caught in the moment what the president was doing to Republicans when he turned around their heckling and said, "So we agree, no cuts to Social Security and Medicare." It kind of caught me it took my breath away. I'm like, "Oh, that was good." Am I being hyperbolic, or did you appreciate it in the moment as well?
Oh, I absolutely did. It's one of my favorite tropes in media. The old guy's still got it. Joe Biden showed last night that he's still got it. Listen, that was a very interactive, I think is the polite way to put
very
the
polite.
State of the Union and the heckling from Republicans. You know, some of us are old enough to remember when it was wall-to-wall coverage and a scandal when a single Republican yelled at President Obama during a State of the Union address. Obviously, the Republican Party has gone further and further to the MAGA extreme since then. And so I thought, you know, this was sort of the next generation of what happens is you figure out how to turn it on its head and use it to your advantage. Last night, Joe Biden did that, extracting a public promise from the Republican Party that they're not going to mess with Social Security or Medicare. We'll see if that holds true. Some of them certainly doth protest too much, but this is a win for the American people if Social Security and Medicare are protected.
This wouldn't even be coming up necessarily if two gentlemen hadn't been so specific. First was Florida Governor Rick Scott with a plan that said we ought to review these types of programs every 5 years. And then Ron Johnson doubling down last August and saying if it were up to him, we'd be reviewing these things every year. Biden didn't call out Ron Johnson by name in the State of the Union, but he did the next morning when he visited Madison, Wisconsin, and he has before. So in many ways, although Ron Johnson did squeak out an electoral victory, he continues to be the gift that keeps on giving in terms of Democrats talking about what Republicans really want to do when they say the quiet parts out loud.
I think it's also worth reminding listeners that Ron Johnson has described Social Security as a Ponzi scheme, which is pretty rich, given that people pay into this throughout their working lives. I just actually finished reading a pretty interesting assessment of the history of country music and hillbilly music, as it used to be called, and the sort of association with very conservative politicians from the Deep South and, you know, fiddling at campaign stops. And what was the issue of the day? Old age pensions, which, of course, with the Social Security Act, was the first time that there was a safety net for our seniors. And, you know, listen, Ron Johnson is not a fan of Social Security, and that's fine. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, not a fan of Social Security, and that's fine. People get to hold those views. What I think is really frustrating for the American people is, if that's what you believe, just tell me that's what you believe, right? So you've got Mike Lee, you know, caught on camera last night, feigning like, oh, he couldn't possibly be. of course we don't want to
roll the tape.
And then you roll the tape, and Mike Lee is dead to rights, saying he wants to pull Social Security up by the roots and get rid of it. I mean, it's like the disregard that so many politicians have for the education of the average American is pretty insulting, we'll say.
There you go. In terms of the environment that was there in the House chamber on Tuesday night, there are plenty of folks, myself included, that think, you know, the Republican Party didn't do itself any favors by allowing the kind of childish behavior that went on, the hollering, the cat calls and everything. And even though Biden turned it to his advantage, I wonder, you talk to as many, you know, active Republicans as I do. Do you feel that they kind of looked at the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts and the others and were saying to themselves, get off my side? Or do they find this refreshing?
No, I think they know they're stuck with it, right? They know that this is the train they're on. And they know that even when you see Kevin McCarthy sitting up there trying to shush the Republican conference, it's not going to go well. Right. They're not going to listen because he's not actually in charge. The best metaphor I heard for that look from him last night was mom in church trying to quiet the kids who are screwing around, but they're in the pew across the aisle. And I know almost everybody in Wisconsin who's ever been to service knows that look from mom. And there's just not much you can do.
No, sadly, there's not. But then afterwards, you know, the president, like, you know, has been tradition for some time. I bring it back to Bill Clinton when he did it. He came to La Crosse one year, the day after State of the Union, and folks were saying it was rather unique and novel at the time. But again, only once again reaffirms Wisconsin's position as a swing state. Tell me about the significance of the president coming, not just coming here as a swing state, that part is obvious, but then coming to a laborers training center to talk about the types of jobs that his economic plan will create.
Listen, presidents of the United States, no matter their party, their age, how long they've been there, they have very limited time. And so scheduling where a president is going to go, when they're going to go there, is pretty complicated. What makes it easy is when the policy and the politics align. So first, the politics. Wisconsin, tipping point state, battleground state, got to have it when President Biden runs for re-election in 2024, which every indication, it's all systems go. So from the politics standpoint, he's got to be here a lot. From the policy standpoint, he talked last night about the role that the American worker and the union worker is playing in rebuilding America, in the successes that this administration has had in the first 2 years, creating 12 million jobs. That's more jobs than have ever been created in 4 years, the four-year term of a president, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs. When you look at the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and the CHIPS Act, two of those bills had bipartisan support and the president was able to get it done. On one, the Inflation Reduction Act, they had to go alone. All of those are going to spur job creation. And the Inflation Reduction Act in particular is going to spur the creation of good paying union jobs. So if you just take one sector of Wisconsin's manufacturing and construction industry, in the next 5 to 6 years, we're going to see about 20,000 jobs in solar energy development alone. not just, you know, house to house, utility scale, big projects. And because of the Inflation Reduction Act, it is more likely that those jobs are going to be completed by union members, by apprentices, earning what's called prevailing wage. That's a good thing. It's good for ratepayers at the end of the day, because the utilities and the developers are going to have to pay less on the front end. Those costs will ultimately be realized by the ratepayer. It's better when local workers do the job, when union workers do the job. They spend the dollars they make in the communities they live in. They don't take it back to South Carolina or Florida where they came from. So in just that one example of an industry that's going to see a tremendous impact from the president's leadership, it makes perfect sense that he was standing with the laborers today, taking a victory lap for all that's been done and all that's going to happen going forward.
I think it's important for people in positions like mine to not be afraid to say that when they underestimated something or got something wrong, however you want to put it. And I want to put out there right now that when Tammy Baldwin was first elected senator, and one of the first things, one of her first initiatives was essentially the Made in America Act. And I thought, well, you know, come on, who's going to be against that? Is that a real thing? And of course, I've learned over time, yeah, it is. And that you can take it to, I'm sure she didn't think of it at the time, but I mean, it's almost logical conclusion is that you would have a great big infrastructure bill and then have what the president announced Tuesday night is that the Made in America Act provisions would go in there for the construction materials that will be used in the infrastructure projects. Tammy Baldwin was basically a decade ahead of her time in making sure that this infrastructure bill could be as much a win for the economy as it's going to turn out to be.
You know, most people who observe politics understand the difference between show horses and workhorses. Tammy Baldwin is a workhorse. Whether it's the Made in America provisions, whether it's the impact she had on the Affordable Care Act when she was still in the House, whether it's pushing to get things like $35 a month insulin cap for seniors on Medicare through in the Inflation Reduction Act, which finally happened last year and is now in, it's happening January 1st. If you're a senior on Medicare, don't let anybody charge you even $36 a month. Call your member of Congress, call Senator Baldwin if anybody tries to. She gets it done. The Defense of Marriage Act, you know, she is a workhorse. I thought it was great the way that President Biden called her out, basically saying anytime he does anything or says anything and Wisconsin isn't at the forefront, he gets a note from Tammy. And that's our Tammy Baldwin going to bat for Wisconsin workers and Wisconsin families every single day.
And it should be noted, though, while Senator Baldwin took note of that in reacting to the president's speech about the insulin cap that is there for Medicare inside the Inflation Reduction Act, it is worth noting that Tom Tiffany and other Republicans have sponsored or supported legislation that essentially would just repeal the Inflation Reduction Act as if it's some kind of a knock on Joe Biden. We're just going to take away everything he's done. But in doing so, what you're saying is you want seniors to pay more for their insulin. And I'm not sure that Republicans maybe thought that through before, you know, piping up the way that they did.
Yeah, and it's not just insulin, right? Right now, every Schedule D vaccine recommended for older adults is covered. If you're on Medicare, you should not be paying out of pocket for a vaccine, whether it's shingles, Tdap, or Dtap, it's sometimes called. That saves seniors, in the case of shingles, hundreds of dollars. I mean, that's an expensive shot. It's a couple of rounds, you know, for a husband and wife or for a couple to go and get that. We're talking like $600 to $800 just for shingles. If you're on Medicare, you no longer have to shell that out. That makes a difference. If Tom Tiffany, if Derek Van Orden, if Mike Gallagher want to run on, we think you should have to pay for that stuff, we think the drug makers need to make even more money, good luck. We'll see you on the trail.
And one thing from the legislature, from state government, that we've talked about this week is the Legislative Audit Committee wants to audit the department that deals with professional licensing. There's been such a backlog. And yet it's obvious to people who watch these things that the backlog is the result of budgetary neglect throughout the Scott Walker years, and that they could have helped with the backlog, but instead are going to spend money on this audit instead. So I get the feeling that this is just the first of several episodes where Republicans in the legislature are going to use, you know, federal or our state tax dollars to punish rather than to help when it comes to government services.
You got to love it when the arsonist leads the investigation into why the fire department didn't put out the fire sooner. That's what this is like. For years, Republicans have underfunded this division and state government as a whole.
We'll have more of our conversation with Joe Sopecki, including some of his top moments that he took away from the State of the Union address, coming up in just a sec here. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Joe Sopecki is back with us now because, like any good nerd that we are, we take notes during these things. And you took it a step further, put together a list of top moments from the president's State of the Union address. Tell us about it.
Yeah, basically five sort of turns of phrase or quotes that really jumped out, moments that you're going to see in the coming days and weeks in social media. Because let's be honest, sitting through a 70-minute speech by any politician is more than most folks are ready for. But the way that we live now in our information environment, what you're going to see are the sound bites, the snippets in social media. And so I always look for those. And I thought there were five really powerful ones that will benefit the president and his supporters and hopefully persuade some folks in the middle. So the first one that jumped out to me, you know, no billionaire should be paying a lower tax rate than a teacher or a firefighter. He's talking about the corporate minimum tax that billion-dollar companies should be paying 15%. He's asking for additional legislation to basically have a minimum tax for billionaires. There's about 1,000 of them in the country. They should all be paying a rate that is no lower than a teacher or a firefighter. I think that speaks to fairness. People understand that, right? Also on the economic front, capitalism without competition isn't capitalism. It's extortion. And I think that takes head on the criticism from a lot of Republicans that we progressives aren't capitalists. Of course we are. We believe in a competitive marketplace and in competition in the economy, because that's what has always made America great. The threat to that is that without competition, without regulations that enforce competition, you run the risk of monopolies abusing their economic power. And then you end up where we are, where airlines can, you know, gouge people, where health insurance companies can do surprise billing. And so I thought that the president very directly taking that on was very smart. Third quote from the president, at the very end of the speech, he talked about the threats to democracy and said, quote, democracy must not be a partisan issue, end quote. That is exactly right. From the assault on the Capitol on January 6th, to the big lie about the 2020 election, to the fact that you have members of Congress by the hundreds who voted not to accept the results of the 2020 election, many of whom were reelected, the fact that you have state officials across the country, including some running for higher office right here in Wisconsin right now today, that's a problem. And we have got to be clear-eyed. This can't be about right or left. Protecting our democracy must come first. We have to take the partisan blinders off. So those were kind of the three quotes that really jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. And then there were two moments. I thought the most powerful of them was the recognition of the young man from Memphis, Tyree, who lost his hands at the lost his life at the hands of some folks who had no business wearing a badge. And his parents were in attendance. And when the president recounted speaking with Tyree's mother, how do you do it? How do you go on? How do you advocate? How do you try? And her belief, her faith that, quote, something good will come of this. And for the president to be able to turn that into commentary on the vast proportion of law enforcement officials in this country, good, honest, hardworking, decent folks who deserve to come home safe every single night. And the reality that we have to root out the bad actors, and we can make policy choices that make it less likely this happens again, that no parents have to endure what that couple who was at the State of the Union last night have had to endure after losing their son, that something good can come of this. And the president's desire to do that, I thought that was one of the most emotionally resonant moments. And the second emotionally resonant moment for me was the tale of the little girl with the rare kidney disease, who he had clearly met and he mentioned was watching the speech if she was still awake at the White House, who from like year one as a very small infant was diagnosed with some serious health challenges. And to be able to tell the story of her turning four, I thought that that's a moment. And it really speaks to one of the things this president does particularly well, which is speaks to the aspirational, ideal version of what America can be, that there's no challenge we can't rise to, that it's never been a good bet to bet against America. You know, you can dismiss that as hokey, as old fashioned, as choogy, choose your word. But I think that that is the heart of Joe Biden, is he truly believes that there is nothing this country can't do, and that far too often it's our politics getting in the way of it. But the spirit of the American people, our ingenuity, our ability to innovate, all of that has lit the world, and it can continue to do so. And that's where he ended it, right? The State of the Union is strong because our spirit is strong. Our workers are strong because of the people of this country. And that's got nothing to do with our politics. And so from that perspective, I thought the president did what he had to do last night, which, remember, is an awfully hard thing to do.
Let me ask one more thing about the public perception of an administration coming into this speech. Polls were showing that, you know, well north of 50% of Americans did not think that President Biden had accomplished very much. And there is this saying that, you know, Democrats like to create policy, Republicans like to create a narrative. That might be oversimplification. It just might be that Republicans understand theater better. Whatever the case may be, once you get past this initial visit, Wisconsin, and the cabinet goes to all these other places, you know, what else does the Biden administration, the Evers administration, what else do they have to do to help people understand what it is they're accomplishing without the noise of the right-wing media bubble getting in the way of the actual work they're doing?
Well, you can't be afraid to celebrate your victories. Right. So every time President Biden's out there, every time Tammy Baldwin and Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore are out there, they need to be reminded, folks, hey, are you a senior on Medicare who's diabetic? That's hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites, by the way. We're the ones who lowered your out-of-pocket cost to $35 a month. Hey, are you a family who had previously struggled to afford health insurance? And now because of the advanced premium tax credits, you're one of the 212,000 Wisconsin families in the Obamacare marketplace. We made that more affordable for you. Hey, have you been concerned about crumbling infrastructure or what the water coming out of the lead pipes that, you know, that feed into your home, what that's been doing to your kids? We're the ones who are going to replace those lead pipes. We did that in the face of Republican opposition. You have to tell your own story over and over again. And for those of us who are read in and happen to know how successful this administration has been in its first 2 years, it's on all of us too. We have to share that with our friends and neighbors and colleagues and coworkers. And if we do that, everything's going to be just fine. Our politics can be scary. Elections are going to be close. But if we tell the story of what this administration has done and how far we have come in the first 2 years, Joe Biden and Democrats across the state and across the country are going to be just fine.
Joe Zepecki, thanks again. Always appreciate it.
You bet.
We really appreciate that out of Joe. Our weekly visits, a little bit extra this time to hear more about the State of the Union and what we can expect for Wisconsin. It's a little bit of good news, because so often what we talk about in the news, especially the political news, is of a nature that is not good. It's either harmful or it's ridiculous. And frankly, we don't know if this new congressional committee is going to be harmful or ridiculous. The new tinfoil hat committee. Again, we need just the right name for it, and we don't have it yet, because for them to call it the Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government is just, I mean, they win every time that somebody has to
call that committee by its fraud of a name enables them to get that message out. This right-wing fringe that controls that committee that included in its initial panel of testimony, Senator Ron Johnson, along with Iowa's Chuck Grassley and former Hawaii Democrat Tulsi Gabbard, all of them just a string of conspiracy theories, unfounded allegations. And I mentioned yesterday, it was only appropriate that they start yesterday, which was the anniversary of former Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy claiming to have a list of communists who were working in the U.S. State Department. And that era of McCarthyism was especially shameful. And now we're in this new era of McCarthyism, Kevin McCarthy rather than Joe McCarthy. And another Wisconsin Senator, Ron Johnson, is, you know, one of the instigators of all of this. But you could, if you look at it from a ridiculousness standpoint, and it's easy to, and while I'm not advocating for alcoholism, it would be easy to become an alcoholic if you turned that committee hearing into a drinking game. Every time you heard about Hunter Biden's laptop or Hillary Clinton's emails, there was even, as shameful as it is, Ron Johnson, what he does best is he just asks questions. He doesn't make a claim. And yesterday, he was just asking questions about whether Dr. Anthony Fauci created COVID or created the conditions that unleashed it. And I mention it here not because it's not going to give credibility to what he says. People will be like, well, you should just ignore it. Don't even. No, I want people to know what this guy is saying, this elected official who only got elected through incredibly racist ads funded by a couple of billionaires. So he gets to spend the next 6 years still saying outlandish things like this. And while he's not relevant, he still gets media attention time from the right-wing bubble. And so it is important that that gets knocked down as often as possible. And then his busy day, his already busy day, got even busier in making multiple media appearances where he just reinforced what President Biden said in the State of the Union speech when he mentioned that certain Republicans would like to see Social Security and Medicare come up for possible cuts every year. It's true, and yet Biden got booed for it. And when he came to Wisconsin this week, he mentioned Ron Johnson by name. And we've been talking about this ever since Ron Johnson embraced the plan put out by Florida Governor Rick Scott last year, which calls for these programs to come up for renewal every year. The uncertainty every year that Social Security or Medicare will take place. And on multiple media appearances yesterday, Ron Johnson talked about it. Do you have a little snippet of some of what he said?
This one is not from yesterday. This one is actually from August of last year.
But the same message.
It's the same message.
Here's a little bit of how he describes it.
Yes, and you know, defense spending has always been discretionary. You know, VA spending is discretionary. What's mandatory are things like Social Security and Medicare. If you qualify for the entitlement, you just get it no matter what the cost. And our problem in this country is that more than 70% of our federal budget, of our federal spending, is all mandatory spending. It's on automatic pilot. It never. You just don't do proper oversight. You don't get in there and fix the programs going bankrupt. It's just on automatic pilot. What we ought to be doing is we ought to turn everything into discretionary spending. So it's all evaluated so that we can fix problems or fix programs that are broken, that are going to be going bankrupt.
All right. So there we go. That's the baseline of what he has to say. But of course, he only lays out the problem without a specific solution. He can say that there's a lot of discretionary spending and that, you know, the Defense Department is part of it. Who believes that Ron Johnson and other so-called budget hawks are going to cut military spending? They're instead going to go after things that they call entitlements, even though you have earned those benefits through your payroll taxes year after year after year. Those are the things that are more likely to cut than some of the other things that, like defense spending that make it up. And but if you want to do this, if you want to do it, where's your plan? How much are you going to cut? And don't do it when it's time to raise the debt ceiling, because that's too late. That's authorizing a budget, from the last cycle. What's your plan for this next cycle, for this next budget? That's what President Biden is asking. He's not going to agree to cuts just for the sake of cuts. He wants Republicans to say what? And that's what Ron Johnson and others don't do. They don't actually put out a plan. They just say, we're going to vote to reauthorize. Well, okay, how much would you cut it then based on this vote? And don't wait till the day of the vote to tell us. Tell us what your plan is, or better yet, instead of saying that these programs are bankrupting us, how about you fund them properly? How about you overhaul the tax system and stop letting millionaires and billionaires get away without paying their fair share? If you tighten that up and fund these programs, that would solve things a heck of a lot faster. Dan Schumacher with Weekend Sports and the Civic Media Homeroom coming up next on Up North News Radio. Franklin's Tower, I believe, is the name of our Grateful Dead tune of the week, as picked by Dan Schumacher, and we will turn to him in just a moment. First, Civic Media Homeroom, before we disperse everybody to their various shows here, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, Green Bay, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba across the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. While we're all here in Homeroom, let's talk about some of the shows for this weekend. For example, one of our newest things is Charlie Behrens, who has the Cripes cast at noon on Saturdays and Sundays. Aaron, you've got details on what we're going to hear this weekend.
Yeah, I've already listened to this weekend's episode. I had to make sure there were no swears.
I was going to say you had to bleep out a word or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should be doing that with Schumacher, but we'll come back to him in a second. So what's Charlie talking about?
So this weekend, he has a guest, Dallas Goldtooth, who is a comedian and environmentalist who is part of an indigenous comedy group, the 1491s, and also known for working on Reservoir Dogs. And it's a really cool segment, or I guess whole show, not just a segment, with an interview with him about getting recognition for indigenous peoples in media and being able to be known not just as that good black comedian, that good indigenous journalist, but known as just a good comedian, a good journalist, without completely losing that part of your identity, like striking that balance.
Sure. Oh, by the way, the 1491s, that's genius. That's perfect. Other notes, let's see. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, has Morning Cannolis live at 9 a.m. on Saturdays.
I love cannolis.
Of course you do. Don Brown has This Week in Waukesha, 8 a.m. Saturday in Waukesha. Wisconsin Rapids listeners get to hear Director's Cut about arts and entertainment. Madison, Saturday nights at 6, you get Max Inc. about arts and entertainment there. We get the replay of Monday's Under the Helmet episodes with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Monday, we've got the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Monday evenings at 7. If you want details on all of these things, listen to them as podcasts or live at civicmedia.us. Dan Schumacher's here joining us from along the Chippewa River, somewhere north of Lake Wissota. How's your week been?
It's been busy. Busy, busy, busy. We had big announcement hiring a football coach this week.
Yeah, you did.
A couple big basketball games, big hockey games on Wednesday night that we won, and been a busy week. It's going to be a busy weekend. We start tonight with some gymnastics senior night, and then I got set up for, which is one of the larger ice fishing contests, tournaments in the state, called the Jigs Up Ice Fishing Contest, sponsored by our booster club up here on Lake Wissota. So, we expect over 2,000 fishermen, tomorrow. We also expect a record crowd because it's going to be 40 degrees and sunny tomorrow.
Ooh, okay. You
know, when it's minus 10, it's not so attractive to come out ice fishing sometimes for the casual fishermen. But tomorrow's going to be one of those days I think it's going to get people off the couches and come on outside and enjoy it.
So the watering hole on Lake Wissota that you and I like to frequent, sometimes it's very tranquil there. And other days like tomorrow, it's going to be a little busy.
It will be wall-to-wall people. There'll be three different locations for weigh stations, seven different locations for the bars and restaurants that we have the technology to scroll and put up on a big screen, people that won prizes, so you don't have to be at one particular place to see if you won by registering your fish. So it's become very sophisticated because it's gotten so big.
Well, good tip of the cap to the Blue Gold Boosters for helping on that. On a much larger sports scale, we finally wrap up the NFL season this week. Kansas City versus Philadelphia, Chiefs-Eagles. Who do you got?
Man, I go back and forth all week, but I'm going to go with what I thought of yesterday. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I think Patrick Mahomes is a special player, not that Jalen Hurts is not, but I think Patrick Mahomes, based on his experience in these big games in recent years, I think that outweighs things. I think there's the Super Bowl is a whole different beast. And if you're the quarterback of the Phillies, there's a lot of pressure on you. And so I would say I'm going to go with the Chiefs. It's a hard pick. I actually think it's going to be a low-scoring game, too.
Do you?
Okay. Even though these two offenses are prolific, and they can both run the football, they can throw the ball. But I think it's going to be somewhere like a 21-17 game.
Okay. All right.
So not so much a high-scoring game.
All right. Sounds good. And we, of course, will talk about that here first thing on Monday morning. Bucks were in L.A. last night. They beat the Lakers 115-106. Giannis had 38 points, 10 rebounds. That's 9 straight wins for the Bucks. They'll go for 10 in a row tonight in L.A. against the Clippers. They will be at home next Tuesday, Valentine's Day, against the Boston Celtics. The Marquette men's basketball team is at Georgetown tomorrow. The Badger basketball team is at Nebraska on Saturday. And in football news, for only the third time, a Wisconsin Badger football alum has been chosen for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Former Badger Joe Thomas got in on the first ballot, only the 7th offensive tackle in the modern era to get into the Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility. He played 11 seasons for the Browns. He was a perennial Pro Bowler. And again, only the third Badger in the Hall of Fame. I will admit to not being, I can't say I followed the Cincinnati Bengals, so I don't know Joe Thomas well. But obviously, if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, you're something special.
Especially coming from the Cleveland Browns. They never won. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe's never been, he never went to a Super Bowl. So, you know, I always find it funny, but he must have been such an amazing player. You know, we don't, like you, Pat, you said, we don't get to see the Browns play a lot other than if they're playing an NFC game based on the TV schedule. But Joe Thomas has been underneath the radar for a long time, but he's been his own greatness. So, usually people that get in the Hall of Fame on first ballot, they were winners. They won Super Bowls or did something like that. But Joe is not that case. But I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the Badger family.
Yeah. The last time I followed the Bengals was when there was Cincinnati, not Cleveland, but for, you know, teams from that area. There was a kid from Eau Claire, Crumry. I can't remember his first name now.
Tim Crumry. He was from Mondovi.
Yeah. That's it. And
he played for the Cincinnati Bengals, played in the Super Bowl when Boomer Esiason was the quarterback.
That's right.
And he played on a broken leg. His famous story is that in that Super Bowl, he had broken his leg and still continued to play the rest of the game.
I knew there was something about I didn't know if it was a leg injury or what. So
he was just up in the area, actually. He was just in the Leader Telegram, a picture of him doing something over in Mondovi.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
Well, good.
Yep.
So it's always nice when you see a happy life after football because too often because of injuries and CTE or money or what have you, it's always good to see that. I'm not going to say happily ever after, but you know, at least there's good sides, that good things that happen on the backside of your playing career, Aaron Rodgers. So give a listen.
He's going into darkness for 4 days.
He's going into a darkness retreat. Isn't that just like your ice fishing shack? Can't you just stay there, you know, and not have any lights for a while?
I heard him try to explain that on that Joe Rogan show, and I just kept shaking my head.
No.
He's out there right now. I don't know where his head is and what he's seeing through his lenses on life, but he gets to go sit in a house for 4 days in the darkness and no light, and they give him food through the slot of a door.
Good. Well, maybe we'll make it 5 days or 6 days, and you know, see if he has good decision making skills after that. Dan Schumacher, thanks so much. Enjoy the jigs up. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me.
All right, talk to you later. On Monday again, we have a couple of state Supreme Court candidates. At 6:15, we have Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County, and at 7:15, Judge Janet Protasiewicz of Milwaukee County. And then we also have Motherhood Mondays, 7:30 on Monday with Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin. That'll do it for Up North News Radio for a Friday. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday.